This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Hey, they didn't throw that old one away. That's good to hear. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Rod McDonald, and I'm filling in for Doug Falconer here for the next couple of weeks while he's on vacation. So don't say you weren't warned. 16 after 12, and coming up today on GX on Agriculture. The situation for livestock producers on the prairies, certainly a dire one, is ongoing drought conditions across the prairies have farm groups concerned. We'll find out some of the measures that are being considered among groups in Manitoba today, including the Manitoba Beef Producers, the Forage and Grassland Association, of course, Keystone Agricultural Producers, to mention just a couple of the groups that are tackling this problem head on. Also coming up on the program today, we'll be joined by the president of Farm Credit Canada, Michael Hoffert. FCC reporting a strong financial performance over this past year, and Michael Hoffert will explain to us on the program today what's made that all possible. First, though, we'll kick things off with the agriculture weather outlook. Precision Weather is a presentation of Sean Prahika, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And now, Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. Our farmers still looking for some moisture, Phil. I don't see any clouds in the sky today, so I really don't see that happening anytime soon. What sort of promises can you make for us today?
Well, I can make the promise that there really isn't much moisture around. Not to say there are no showers in the forecast, but there is just not much moisture to work with. So our chance of showers is mainly a pop-up shower here and there, mainly this afternoon, seeing a couple over central and almost eastern Manitoba. Now, may get a few more flaring up closer to home this afternoon. There is a disturbance that's pulling some warm air back north this afternoon, and it comes through during daytime heating. So whenever you get that, you start to realize, well, there's a possibility that things could pop up into a couple of showers. But then you realize that the dew point is still in the low teens, and the temperature climbing into the upper 20s really gives us fairly dry air, so not overly confident, putting a 20% chance for one of those showers and storms popping up this afternoon. Again, most of us over Saskatchewan not getting many. Better chance will be over western Manitoba. Tonight, clear sky. We're down to 15. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. That front does lift back to the north of us. That should push us into the low 30s. In fact, mid-30s likely will get into the region. I think on the average we're in the low 30s, but again, watch for those warmer spots. Wind from the southeast tomorrow, 15 to 25, and through the afternoon, late afternoon, even early evening, there's likely going to be a period of gustier winds. Now, when you get the gusty winds, the warm temperatures, and we're still dealing with pretty dry air, the fire danger up, especially in the afternoon tomorrow. Behind that gust of wind, that's actually a front. That's our impact. No showers, just a bit of a burst of wind. Behind that, temperatures actually come down a bit. Not at so much Tuesday night, we're down to 16, but during the day Wednesday, 29. It's still above normal. It's not 30s. That's the difference. Also, the humidity spikes a little bit Tuesday night, just behind that front. And that's why the chance of rain isn't zero. It's almost so negligible it's not worth mentioning, but it's not zero. Wednesday, mostly sunny sky with a high of 29. Thursday, a little better chance of a shower during the night. Still, daytime is negligible, almost zero. Thursday night, chance of rain as high as 20%, though right in the middle of the night, still limited showers for anything that does form. Friday, up to around 29. The chance of showers there, with three mentions, most of us see nothing. Those of us see anything, a couple of millimeters should about do it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Spivak. Now, turning to this hour's current conditions, The Paw reporting 20 degrees, Swan River at 17, 21 this hour in Dauphin, 24 in Brandon, along with Broadview and Mooseman, Shoal Lake Russell 23, Roblin 21, Regina 25 degrees, Saskatoon, Hudson Bay check in at 23, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington all 22. In the Yorkton-Melville region, mainly sunny. The wind is light, east-northeast at 4, relative humidity 47%, and our current temperature up a couple of degrees in the past hour, now 23. Yesterday's high and low, 27 and 11. No precipitation in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. Normals for this period, daytime highs around 25. Overnight lows near 13. Sunrise this morning was at 5:19. The sun will set this evening at 9:07. Hotspot in Manitoba yesterday, 31 degrees in Morden. The coolest spot in the province was Lynn Lake with a temperature of 3. In Saskatchewan, Belle Marie, 35 degrees. The Canadian or the Saskatchewan hotspot. Meantime, the coldest spot in Saskatchewan, Stony Rapids, and the temperature dipped to 0. Once again, our current conditions, mainly sunny, wind light, 47% relative humidity, and our temperature is 23 degrees. It's 12:22 now, 1:22 in Manitoba. A quick break, and we're right back on GX on Agriculture after this. 12:23, 1:23 in Manitoba. AgriView is coming up next at 12:30. Regina-based Farm Credit Canada is reporting a strong financial performance in the past year despite the pandemic. FCC President Michael Hoffert says the FCC portfolio grew by 7.6%, reaching over $41 billion.
Our fiscal year for 2020-2021 that ended March 31st, we did see a strong year for growth in demand for credit, you know, which was a bit surprising as we started the year with COVID, of course, and some of the disruptions in supply chains and really a lot of wonders on what the year would hold. And then as things unfolded, for sure, we did see increase in demand for credit. Some of that corresponded with improving commodity prices. But at the end of the year, we'd grown by 7.5%, and our portfolio was now $41.5 billion.
The number of deferred payments was up last year. We asked Hoffert what the cause of that was.
Yeah, we did. A lot of the offer we had was to deal with the COVID disruptions that happened. And so it varied across the country and what types of enterprises needed to take advantage of those and saw, you know, either adjustments to their cash flows that required something to happen. Or, you know, just some extra expenses wasn't uncommon as well. So we would have had around 4,900 of our customers and over $5 billion of deferrals in our loan payments, you know, just coming into the start of that year. In addition, we did offer some COVID, what we call COVID credit lines of different sizes that were targeted at different customer groups. And we had just under $1 billion of approvals for those as well. And so that was really coming out of that spring, just where there was a lot of things happening and a lot of uncertainty. And so we were, we're able to lean in and I would say support the industry, both agriculture producers, but also food processors, which were really impacted early on.
Hoffert says it ended up being a pretty good year for Canadian food and food exports.
Yeah, it was for sure. As things unfolded and, we did work our way through that first, say, two quarters of our fiscal year. So you think over the summer and into fall, and then things started to get on track again. You know, we had very, very strong exports of, say, the key commodities and where we thought we might, you know, there was a period of time where it was really difficult for, say, cattle producers and feedlots in particular. You know, that was a little bit better by the fall and into the cow-calf run was not as disruptive as we thought it might be. And so, every sector, I think, had a little bit of a shudder where there was something that was, had to be managed. And at the end of the day, it really confirmed the resiliency of Canadian egg producers and those involved in agribusiness and agri-food side of the business. There was a lot of things that happened that were positive at the end of the day.
Hoffert says FCC made some financial contributions to a number of communities this past year. We asked him to elaborate on that program.
We're a mandate-driven, purpose-driven organization, and we look to contribute back in communities where we live and work. Our employees are located across the country, and also we're in the food business, so we support and serve the industry that feeds Canadians and feeds folks around the world. So, one of the long-term program that we've had is, of course, our Driveway Hunger campaign, and we work with schools and communities and food processors and customers across the country. And this year was pretty special. You know, it was a year of need, I would say, due to a lot of reasons, economics-wise and with the pandemic. And our food drive, along with our partners, we had a record 17 million meals that were were donated to food banks across the country, and some of those in quite small towns and some of those in our larger centers where there was great degrees of need. And so those are, you know, there's examples of that for sure. We would we do some community financing of projects or grants to projects to improve rural communities. And we also, you know, just some really important, I think, contributions to organizations of youth like our 4-H and others that we get involved with Egg in a Classroom. And, you know, just try and make a bit of difference. And if we can bring others with us through partnerships, that's often our goal and how we approach things.
Hofford says FCC's net income for the year was pretty impressive.
So the organization, we actually had a very strong net income in our last fiscal year of $812.5 million. So, and some of that was reflective, I would say, of some of the growth that was above what we anticipated doing. And some of it also was the, I guess, adjustments that we made to set aside more for credit losses that we thought might be coming as a result of the COVID pandemic at the start of the fiscal year. By the end of the fiscal year, some of that started to, our models were telling us that wasn't going to be necessary, that the balance sheet for the industry was strong, that there was profitability in the bulk of our customer base that should allow them to make their payments as normal. So some of that 812 did have some special factors that came into play, but was very reflective of, you know, the strength and resiliency of the Canadian sector, you know, overall from coast to coast. It does also, you know, that those funds, of course, will be available to relend into the industry and allow us to do some special programming that we'd like to do, whether it's for, you know, young entrepreneurs, young farmers. We had over $4.6 billion of loans to that group last year, or to, you know, some other areas like Indigenous agriculture or women entrepreneurs are great examples where we've got some programming that we're looking to continue to roll out and to build on.
FCC has continued to show strong growth, and the organization is now valued at about $41.5 billion. Hofford says, yeah, it's pretty big.
You know, it is. And if I think about my career, it's I've been at FCC for over 33 years now, and we have grown. And you know, if anybody, when I look at it, we're reflective of the industry that we serve. So, you know, the industry that was coming out of that farm debt crisis of that late 80s period and really from a profitability perspective had some struggles in some ways. It's what we have now where we're, you know, very resilient, very strong, I would say a globally important egg food sector that does need some capital to drive its growth. But it's also, you know, running with, when we don't have a year, I guess, with some of the growing condition challenge we might have this year, but really some profitability that makes those investments possible. And so FCC is, you know, we're one of many that serve the industry from a financing perspective. And we've got around a 28, 29% market share, which is quite steady. And so there's been lots of things happening in the Canadian egg and food side and from an investment perspective and to I would say continue to grow what we can produce, what we can process, and then ultimately just that contribution to the overall Canadian economy, and it's substantive.
Michael Hofford is president and CEO of Farm Credit Canada, of course the organization based in Regina. It's 12:30 now, 1:30 in Manitoba, and time for Ag Review. Brought to you by Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
Ongoing drought conditions across Manitoba have a coalition of farm groups urging producers to know their options when making decisions about their crops. Manitoba beef producers, the Manitoba Forage and Grassland Association, along with CAP, the Keystone Agricultural Producers, Manitoba Crop Alliance, the Manitoba Bison Association, and the Manitoba Sheep Association, are warning that ongoing drought conditions pose a significant challenge to livestock, grain, and forage producers. The chair of the Manitoba Crop Alliance, Fred Gregg, says producers need to know their options so they can make the best business decisions for their operation. Before making decisions about drought-damaged crops, the coalition is asking producers to contact Manitoba Agricultural Services Corporation about putting crops to alternative use. Manitoba Beef Producers President Tyler Fulton says successive droughts in some regions of the province have taxed livestock producers' ability to secure feed, so being able to source alternative feed and roughage sources is critical. Fulton says there are resources to help producers determine the value of a crop harvested as silage or green feed. Manitoba Agriculture and Resource Development provides information regarding the cost of production for grain and silage crops, forage supply management, pricing for baled forages and piled silage, and the value of straw as a crop fertilizer. The USDA has announced it will use $500 million of its nearly $2 trillion American Rescue Plan to expand meat processing capacity across the nation. U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the funds are intended to increase competition in the processing industry and strengthen resilience in the food supply chain. In addition to helping build new processing facilities, Vilsack says existing small and medium processors will receive $55 million in aid. He says the announcement is meant to dovetail with U.S. President Biden's most recent executive order, which seeks to ignite competition in a slew of industries, including agriculture. The dispute between Canada and the U.S. over the allocation of dairy tariff rate quotas under the new North American trade deal took a step toward resolution recently as the members of the three-person dispute panel that will issue a ruling on the U.S. complaint were announced. The dairy dispute was discussed in meetings between Canada's Trade Minister Mary Ng and her U.S. counterpart, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai. According to the dispute settlement process laid out in the trade agreement, the panel has 150 days to present an initial report in cases related to perishable goods, which might include dairy. The panel has 120 days after the date of the appointment of the last panelist. This is the first panel request filed under Chapter 31 of the trade deal. German pig prices were unchanged last week, despite the discovery of African swine fever in farm animals. A third case of ASF was confirmed in farm pigs in the eastern state of Brandenburg, following the first discovery on farms the previous week. Previous cases have only been found in wild animals, with over 1,200 infections from African swine fever so far in wild boar in the Brandenburg area. Brandenburg borders Poland, where the disease is widespread. The disease was found on small farms, and Brandenburg is not a large pig farming area in Germany. Many countries banned German pork imports back in September 2020 after ASF was found in wild boars. Germany's domestic pork market is difficult with a lack of demand. Restaurants and major events generating meat demand still aren't back to normal, with continuing uncertainty about increasing numbers of COVID-19 cases. Light farm and yard work are deemed appropriate for workers aged 14 and 15 under new employment standards taking effect in BC this fall. The province has announced changes to its Employment Standards Act, which have been through the development and consultation stages since 2019 and have now been finalized and will take effect the middle of October. The planned changes to work standards raise the general working age in BC to 16, up from 12 currently, and more specifically, defines types of jobs appropriate for those under 16. Under the new standards, the province noted, children aged 12 and up can continue to be employed in a business or on a farm owned by an immediate family member as long as the work meets safety criteria set out in its regulations. Among examples of light work the province lists as appropriate for 14 and 15-year-olds were light farm and yard work, such as gardening, harvesting by hand, clearing leaves and snow, and grass cutting, along with certain recreation, retail, food service, and desk jobs. Among tasks to be listed as generally treated as unsafe for youth under 16 were repairing, maintaining, or operating heavy machinery, as well as lifting, carrying, or moving heavy items or animals, and using, handling, or applying hazardous substances such as pesticides. The number of hemp acres grown in Canada, of which more than 80% are located on the prairies, have ebbed and flowed over the past few years. In 2018, over 41,000 acres were planted, according to StatsCan, but that total more than doubled the next year to 91,000. Then, in 2020, the number went down to 53,000. However, this year was projected for growth up to over 66,000 acres. Hemp production was first legalized in Canada back in 1998, but is still heavily regulated by Health Canada. In 2020, 1,269 industrial hemp licenses were issued by the federal government, including 582 in the prairies, with 499 of those for cultivation. Industrial hemp is from the same species of plant as cannabis, but the former must have less than 0.3% concentration of THC, the main psychoactive compound in cannabis, in the flowering heads and leaves. And that is today's Ag Review. It's coming up on 12:39, 1:39 in Manitoba, and we'll check the livestock market conditions coming up next.
Livestock market conditions.
August live cattle 123.45, that was up $1.95 today. October live cattle 129.20, up 205. August feeder cattle closed today at 162.20, that was up 212. September feeder cattle 164.82, up 230. August lean hogs 107.40, that was up 5 cents at the close, and October lean hogs closed today at 93.10, up 47 cents. And those are the latest U.S. livestock futures. Of course, we have the grain prices coming up in about 10 minutes from now at 10 to 1, 10 to 2 in Manitoba. A swine practitioner with the Swine Vet Center says the PERS 1.4.4 variant has had a much more dramatic impact than any other PERS viruses in terms of the number of abortion and sow mortalities. Dr. Paul Yeske is a swine practitioner with the Swine Vet Center in St. Peter, Minnesota. He observes this virus hasn't done anything that hasn't been seen with PERS before, but he says this one is certainly the most dramatic.
What we've seen on the sow farms anyway, it seems that this virus has a pretty distinct footprint. When we see this virus come into a herd, you almost don't have to wait for the sequencing to come back. You almost know what that's going to look like before you get it back once you've seen some of the clinical signs. So we see all the things we expect with PERS. Probably the predominant one is the off-feed, the abortions, the increased sow mortality, increased piglet mortality, increased mummies. Also, this one tends to have a pretty high post-weaning mortality and definitely slow growth in the finishing phase. And I would say one of the things that's unique to this virus, at least the first couple herds, and it's been that way in each one of the ones I've seen it come into, is it tends to move very quickly through the herd once you start to see clinical signs. You'll start out with four or five animals off feed, and the next day there's maybe 250 off feed to 300 off feed, and it marches through the barns relatively quickly. So diagnostically, so far I'd say it's been fairly easy to diagnose. Like I said, the clinical signs, it's moving through the herd quickly. You start to see a lot of abortions, you start to see a lot of off feeds, a lot of mortalities. And so again, you're probably not going to miss this one just because of the magnitude of what you're going to be seeing. What we've seen is some very low CT values on those initial tests that we've run, down in the teens. So lots of virus, and there's really no difficulty in finding the virus. And then the ORF5 sequencing, at least what we've seen, across these herds that are showing similar clinical signs, even over a fairly large geographic region, has been pretty tight, about 90. We've seen some that are 100% matches and some that are 99.8 and 99.7. So again, when we're just looking at the ORF5, pretty tight percent comparison there.
It's 1243 now, 143 in Manitoba. The Director of Risk Management with Hams Marketing Services says a legislated reduction in U.S. hog processing capacity will have its biggest negative impact on hog markets this fall and winter. The Biden administration has until the end of next month to appeal a federal district court ruling that took effect recently, which struck down pork harvest facility line speeds allowed under the USDA's new swine inspection system. Tyler Fulton explains what he's seeing in terms of slaughter hog supply right now.
The hog supply is always a critical feature in North American hog markets, especially given the pandemic. We really weren't getting great information on how all of the influences of the pandemic have changed the flows. Generally speaking, the hog inventory as compared to expectations before the report came down, were actually pretty close. They didn't have a significant divergence from what the expectations were, but there's still a lot of question of variability within those categories, but overall pretty near expectations and one that that overall still sees fairly steady supplies in the long term. We don't see any significant reductions, that's for sure. And of course there's other issues that will be impacting markets longer term.
We asked Fulton if U.S. processing capacity is keeping pace with demand at this point.
Yeah, so in the summer months, there's not typically much of an issue with packer capacity and the available supply. We typically are, we're currently at probably the lowest weekly production or among the lowest weekly production numbers for the year. And that's a fairly typical trend. So there is some slack capacity there, but moving into the fall time frame, we do have some new concerns. There was a new law that was upheld or passed that is concerning for U.S. hog packers because it could legislate a reduction in their processing capacity. Now, some of the numbers that have been tossed around is about a 2.5% decline in processing capacity, which, at this time of year would not be an issue. But at peak production time frame, such as October, November, December, it could result in a pretty significant influence on the markets if the pace at which those hogs are slaughtered is slowed by legislation. So it's something that I don't think it's a story that's completely, finished yet. I think there's some questions as to how that law will be applied. But it's, it's a concern and a threat going into the fall months.
And could that have a potential impact on Canadian producers finding homes for their hogs as well?
Well, in Western Canada, we don't see a lot of market hogs moving south. There's definitely still a significant number of market hogs moving from Ontario into the U.S., and so that, I guess, could be a constraint. And above all else, really, it will show up in price. They will discount the extra hogs that aren't committed on a long-term contract, and so as I said, it's a threat moving forward. As far as it's hard to say exactly how that would impact the pot, you know, how that would impact ISO wean or weanling prices, but I think it's it would be fair to say that if we do see a distinct difference in processing capacity in the United States, then it would filter down all the way back to ISO wean producers here in Canada.
And what are we seeing at this point, Tyler, in terms of hog values?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, we saw a pretty dramatic decline in cash markets from the highs, from some of the record highs that we've seen definitely some of the highest levels that we've seen in the last 5 years. That said, we've seen a little bit of a recovery here just in the last week, and we're still dealing with good profitable prices right straight through the summer months and into the fall. We might come under some pressure from a profitability standpoint in December, despite, seasonally strong prices being represented in forward prices. And that comes from the fact that there's just a lot of price pressure on the feed side of the equation that is really squeezing margins. So there's some question there. We're definitely down from the highs on the winter months, but I don't think we can rule out a recovery in forward prices, at least back to levels seen a couple of weeks ago before we saw the larger decline.
And finally, we asked Fulton what producers should be watching and considering moving forward.
Well, given that we've come off of our highs, those producers that have some room to secure some good profitable prices into the fall months should maybe consider looking at doing, 30 to 40%. Just taking a prudent approach, not trying to kind of necessarily pick the highs off, just securing good profitable prices on hogs really out into the winter months if the potential is there. Utilizing targets is a really good tool because in the event that we get just a lot, a short volatile stretch, sometimes we can hit targets that that are not fundamentally supported, and so it can sometimes trigger a contract just on a very short-term price rise, and then it secures some prices that would be profitable for producers. So that's generally what we're seeing with producer activity over the course of the last month or so.
Tyler Fulton, Director of Risk Management with HAMS Marketing Services. It's 9:01 now, before 2 in Manitoba, and we have the closing grain prices next.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Commodities update.
Well, canola futures took another nice jump today. November, $896.40 a metric ton. That was up $13 today. January canola, $880.90, up $13.50. September, Minneapolis wheat closed at $878.75 a bushel, down 4.75 cents. September Kansas City wheat, $6.39, down 7 cents. September Chicago wheat closed today at $6.77 a bushel, down 7 cents. September corn, $5.49.75, up 2.5 cents. September soybeans, $13.62.5, up 6.75 cents. And September oats closed at $4.62 a bushel. That was up 0.5 cents. And those are today's closing commodities. It's coming up on 6:01, before 2 in Manitoba now. And for canola customers, you're going to have to find some new sources or substitutes in the coming year. Mike Jubenville is with Markets Farm and has done some number crunching. He sees canola exports going from around 10 million tons this year to only about 7.6 million in the upcoming crop year.
Stalwart buyers, like the Japans and the Mexicos, U.S. and the Chinas and such, are probably going to get their share, but it's going to be on a first-come, first-served basis this year when we get into the next year's marketing season. And a number of, regular buyers of Canadian canola are just not going to be able to get their traditional fill from Canada, whether it's Europe or Bangladesh, Pakistan, United Arab Emirates, or otherwise.
Domestic canola crushers will likely see a 5 to 10% drop in supply, with Eastern Canadian facilities looking elsewhere to fill their needs.
I suspect we're going to see the margins, crush margins, work for crushers out in Eastern Canada. They're going to probably bring some offshore canola rapeseed in, maybe it's from Ukraine or otherwise, and forego some of the product from Western Canada's supplies. They're certainly going to be tight. So we're going to probably have a very tight supply situation amongst the crushers to battle over.
Jubenville says the hot, dry weather has caused irreversible yield loss. Right now, he's lowered his canola crop estimate to 16 or 17 million tons. But others are even less optimistic.
I wonder what happens if this turns out to be a 16 or a 15 or a 14 million ton crop that, people in the trade are already talking about. I'm not prepared necessarily to go there just yet, but the trend towards smaller crop is certainly the fashionable part of the conversation as it stands right now.
Jubenville says all of this will result in continued fluctuations in canola futures.
With no stock rebuilding this year, there's no reason to believe that we're about to undertake any sustained downward trend in terms of prices anytime soon. But make no mistake about it, we are into crazy times on this canola market. So wild, volatile price swings in this environment can and will occur, certainly on a whim.
And once again, 12:56, excuse me, it's 4 before 1 before 2 in Manitoba. Canada thistle has long been a nuisance weed on the prairies, and it's not easy to get rid of. Kiana Bohr is a summer student working with Saskatchewan Agriculture in North Battleford, and she has this update.
Canada thistle is a hardy perennial weed that persists in many agricultural settings. The extensive root system of Canada thistle can reach several meters below the soil surface, allowing it to access moisture deep in the soil profile during dry conditions. These huge root systems also ensure plants have food to survive the winter and can quickly grow in the spring. New Canada thistle plants are produced by seeds, or more commonly from root buds that develop along lateral roots and send up new shoots. Once growing in the spring, Canada thistle continues to use stored root reserves until flowers are produced. If plants are mowed or tilled just before flower buds are produced, seeds will not be set and root reserves will be at their lowest level, causing the most damage to the plant. However, mowing is not always possible, especially in annual cropping systems. After flowering into late summer and fall, Canada thistle begins to replenish its root reserves to prepare for overwintering. This is the most effective time to use chemical control because herbicides will be taken up by the plant and translocated down into the roots. For canola crops, pre-harvest applications of glyphosate can be used to control Canada thistle in late summer or fall. Glyphosate is a Group 9 non-selective herbicide. It will slowly start yellowing new Canada thistle growth before spreading through the entire plant. Be sure to check with your grain buyer before applying pre-harvest glyphosate to ensure they do not have pre-harvest glyphosate restrictions. Maximum residue limits are also in place for many crops and need to be carefully considered before applying any pre-harvest herbicides. Only apply glyphosate to canola crops when seed moisture is at 30% or less to minimize the uptake of glyphosate into the grain. Canola pods should be green to yellow, and most seeds are yellow to brown. The extensive root system of Canada thistle is what makes it so resilient and difficult to control. Approaches to manage Canada thistle must target the root system, and this is most effective in the fall. This is Kiana Bohr, summer student for the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture in the North Battleford Regional Office.
Thank you for that, Kiana. It's coming up on 12:59 now, 1:59 in Manitoba. And we'll close out our program with the agriculture weather forecast. That's coming up next. And we'll close out GX on Agriculture now with our precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Continuing sunny this afternoon, wind west 10 to 20, high 29. Clear tonight, wind east-southeast 15 to 25, overnight low 15. Sunshine back again tomorrow, southeast breeze 15 to 25, hot up to 33. Continuing sunny Wednesday, high 29. Partly to mainly sunny Thursday, 30. And partly to mainly sunny again on Friday, and our high near 29. Now, this hour's temperature roundup, 20 degrees in La Paw, Swan River, 17. Dauphin, Roblin, both reporting 21. 24 degrees in Brandon, along with Broadview and Mooseman. It's 23 in Shoal Lake and Russell. 25 degrees in Regina. Saskatoon, Hudson Bay, both reporting 23. Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 22 degrees. In the Yorkton-Melville region, mainly sunny. The wind is light, east-northeast at about 4. Relative humidity 47%, and our current temperature is 23 degrees. Time's up for today. Join me again tomorrow afternoon at 12:15, 1:15 in Manitoba for another edition of GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.